take his mask and shut. I ain't wearing it no more. Y'all look at me like I'm from Mars when I don't wear it in the store. Don't even try to make me put it on or I'm walking out the door. Take his mask and shut. I ain't wearing it no more. I've been shopping in this place for almost 15 years. And I've seen all kinds of viruses, but I've never lived in fear. Now I know that Corona's real and it probably ain't a lot to ask. But I ain't a bank robber and I ain't the Lone Ranger and I don't want to wear this mask. Take this mask and shove it. I ain't wearing it no more. Y'all look at me like I'm the devil when I don't wear it in the store. Don't even try to make me put it on or I'm walking out the door. Take his mask and shove it. I ain't wearing it no more. COVID-19's a real bad dude and they say there ain't no cure. Hydroxychloroquine or a new vaccine, I just can't be sure. Think I'll drink a little shine every morning when I start my day. Might not kill the virus, but it'll give me the courage to say, take this mask and shove it. Corona needs to be gone. My woman stays home, spends all my money on Amazon. I just want to hug everybody like I did before. So take this plague and shove it. We ain't taking it no more. And take this mask and shove it. No, honey, I got it right here. I told you I was going to put it on. It's right here. I'm wearing it. I ain't going without it.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Armchair Survivalist. My name is Kurt Wilson. I'm the Armchair Survivalist, and today is November the 7th in the year 2021. Welcome to the show. You can go to armchairsurvivalist.com, and you can scroll down, and at the bottom, you'll see ways to listen. You see, I'm on every podcast venue there is, iHeartRadio, Pandora, I don't care, all over the place. I'm on satellite. There's even a phone number there you can call in and listen on your phone. I have archives. You can download any of my current shows for the year. And I have show notes whenever I get the chance to get them up that show you everything that I've been talking about. And I'm everything is happening this week. You wouldn't believe all that's going on this week. But I do, unfortunately, have some bad news.
Welcome to the National Intel Report. I'm your host tonight, Steve Elkins. The date is November 5th, 2021. The rain is pouring down here in Florida. It's been pouring all day. Tears falling from heaven, some may say. I'm here under a very strange circumstances tonight. I'm here with a saddened and a heavy heart to tell you that Mr. John Stadmiller had passed away this afternoon around 12:35 Eastern Standard Time. Not from COVID.
So John Stadmiller is dead. He had a upper respiratory infection that he'd had for weeks and weeks. And he went on a trip. When he came back, he had a massive coronary, that's what killed him, is the coronary. I knew John personally. Him and I were both on GCN at the same time. And we both got booted off because neither of us liked Alex Jones. John was a little more outlandish than I was, and he wasn't afraid to say so on the air. And that was one of the problems he had. He didn't edit himself. There was no filter there. So I never did get on his network because he didn't have a time slot that I would fit into, even though almost every year he'd call me up and say, hey, Kurt, let's get you on here now. Anyway, so John's gone. And slowly but surely, they're picking us off. I hate to say it, but this is the way it's working now in this communist nation that we have. So Godspeed, John. We'll see you next time. Anyway, little news on the company side, Survival Enterprises, SE1.us, survivalenterprises.com. You guys want to buy something, you better get off your butt and do it. And I don't mean just for me. I'm talking anywhere. Because shortages are getting to be astounding. we're finding, well, we can't get certain products because the company that manufactures the products for us can't get lids. We can't get another product because a company that formulates that for us can't get certain ingredients. Oh, someday they'll get them. My Mountain House Foods that I have, a bucket, $110. It's like a week's worth of food. This is freeze-dried food. It'll last you 30 to 50 years. No ifs, ands, or buts. When can I replenish it? They're thinking somewhere in February next year. Now, regardless, you've been warned. Okay, now here's another thing that happened this week, and this happened last night, and this is kind of weird, and I verified everything. You know, we have a chat room, armchairsurvivalist.com/chat.html. It's hosted by Chatango. I got a phone call last night from security personnel at a, shall we say, an unnamed prison system in Northern California for the criminally insane. And when this security guard or agent contacted me, we were talking, and he said, look, these guys aren't all going to eat your face off. You know, a lot of them are out of the almost 2,000 clients that we have, maybe 750 of them that have actual internet ability. They can go into the common room, and there's computers there, and they can go on the internet. Now they go through what's called a black box, and a black box stops them from going to any site that they want banned. And he goes, and the truth is, your site is on in that black box. Your site is banned from them accessing. I said, well, what do you want? You want me to unban them or something? I mean, what are you calling me for? He goes, well, okay. It's a long run-up, but here's the thing. The FBI called me because they were able to track three people who were going to Chatango's address. Now, Chatango is on their server, not mine. So it's a different IP address. And what these three people were doing is going to the chat page via a known exit point for the Russian hackers. These Russian hackers that are stealing crap and ransomware and all of this stuff, they use an IP address, and I won't give you the whole one, but it starts with 185. It's a European-based unit, and it comes out of the Russian Federation. And they said, we found three entities that were accessing that service via these computers. So I said, well, why are you calling me? Why don't you just stop them? Because we don't know who they are. Funny thing is, I mentioned to him, I said, well, we've got this troll that comes in the chat room, and he sounds like some retarded, angry, millennial snowflake. And he goes, well, that narrows it down to about 1,500 people here. We keep a copy. All the moderators keep copies of everything this fruitcake posts. So I sent the guy the complete list of everything this guy said. And he goes, yep, sounds like somebody here. Why don't you monitor the chat room and see what happens? He goes, I will. I'll listen to the show. And if anything happens, I'll see it in real life. And if nothing else, we can just go into the room where the computers are and see who's, you know, on the computer at that exact moment. So this is something he's going to be playing with. I don't know. It's got nothing to do with us. But we'll see what happens. So I don't know. Just want to let you guys know. He's not going to be in the chat room. He's going to be at the page. See, I have it set up to where as soon as somebody opens that page, they can listen to the show. And he said they could just be listening to the show, and that's it. So he said, look, we just need to find out what's going on because the FBI asked my assistants, and they want to know why somebody is using that exact server. Anyway, just want to let everybody know, not a big deal. It's not going to affect anything in the chat room. If the guys are just coming in there and listening, I could care less. If this is a problem they got, not me. All right, now we're going directly into the health department.
It is brought to you by Pfizer.
CBS Health Watch, sponsored by Pfizer.
Anderson Cooper 360, brought to you by Pfizer.
ABC News Nightline, brought to you by Pfizer.
Making a difference. Brought to you by Pfizer.
CNN Tonight. Brought to you by Pfizer.
Early Start.
Brought to you by Pfizer.
Friday night on Aaron Burnett Out Front.
Brought to you by Pfizer.
This Week with George Stephanopoulos is brought to you by Pfizer.
This weather report brought to you by Pfizer.
Today's countdown to the royal wedding is brought to you by Pfizer.
And now a CBS Sports Update brought to you by Pfizer.
Meet the Press Data Download. Brought to you by Pfizer.
This portion of CBS This Morning, sponsored by Pfizer.
On how to find the hidden sugars in the American family diet, sponsored by Pfizer.
Just to let everybody know, as if you don't know it already, within the next 2 to 3 months, you're going to be watching the economy totally collapse. And I'll tell you why. Because all of these mandates that are being put out, majority of the people are saying, screw you, and quitting, or walking away, or saying, no, I'm not going to take this shot, and I'm not going to do a test every day, and I'm not going to wear a mask if I'm out digging ditches. This is ridiculous. To give you an example, 9,000 New York cops, firefighters, and garbage workers walked off. Now, they're on unpaid leave. Let me explain to you what that means. That's not being fired. It would cause massive, and I mean massive, lawsuits if the communist governments just fired everybody. Because these people have pensions, these people have medical care, they have certain benefits, and if they were fired, they would lose it all. So they're not losing any of those things because they're putting them on unpaid leave. My brother was on unpaid leave from the NRA for a year and a half because they wanted him to make sure that he still had his medical and he wasn't going to sue them. So I just wanted to explain that to you. 26 firehouses closed in New York City. Garbage is piling up. I remember in the 60s seeing videos of places where the garbage men flat wouldn't go because the blacks there were rioting at all times. And it was piled. Garbage bags were piled 20 feet high. If you go back a ways with a telephoto lens, it looks like the walls of black snow. That's how large they were. Just so in case any of you Marines out there decided you're not going to take the vax, as of November 28th, you're booted out. You're booted out. They're kicking you out of the Marine Corps. They've already started to do that in the Navy. As of January 4th, the business mandate for businesses that have over 100 employees are mandated to order everyone to get shots. That's bad, huh? That's really bad, yeah. Except for one minor thing. That's the first step. The next step is OSHA wants to order all employees of even one person to mandate they get shots too. You've heard a lot about airlines canceling flights and American last week, canceled over 2,000 flights. And they come out and say, oh, it's the weather. The weather did this. Really? We had worse weather than this years ago, and you didn't cancel 2,000 flights. Well, it's because crew are walking off. The crew is saying, no, we're not going to get these shots. And I cannot verify this because it's the incident's put up, it's taken down anywhere on the internet. So far, in flight, 15 pilots and or co-pilots have died from cardiac arrest in flight from various airlines. The pilots are the first ones that were mandated to get the shots. And just think, they're giving these shots to our Air Force pilots as well.
I saw 5 patients in clinic, 2 of which presented with chest pain days to weeks after vaccination and were subsequently diagnosed with pericarditis and worked up to rule out myocarditis. The third pilot had been vaccinated and felt like he was drunk, chronically fatigued within 24 hours after vaccination. The pilot told me he didn't know what to do, so he drank a lot of coffee to try and, quote, wake himself up and continued to fly until he realized it wasn't going away. After I reported to my command my concerns that in one morning I had to ground 3 out of 3 pilots due to vaccine injuries, the next day my patients were canceled, my charts were pulled for review, and I was told that I would not be seeing acute patients anymore, just healthy pilots there for their flight physical.
So with intent, we're pretty much decimating all of our military right now. They're either going to get this shot, which will debilitate them, have them become possible liabilities, or they don't get the shot and they'll be kicked out. Does this sound like maybe somebody's in charge of this whole thing that wants all this to happen? Does it? No, it couldn't be that large a conspiracy, could it? Ford is mandating the vaccination to all 30,000 workers. If you work for Ford Motor Companies, they're going to tell you, get a shot or you're out of here. Do you know, and I mentioned this, thousands and thousands of companies are going to be losing hundreds of thousands of employees. We'll see what happens from that. I can tell you what happened during the Depression when thousands of companies closed down. A lot of people said, you know what, there's a lot of money in banks. Let's go rob one. So they decided to, and there was a lot of bank robberies going on at the time. Communist governor in Colorado issued an executive order that all hospitals don't have to see anybody who's unvaxxed. If somebody comes up to your hospital who wants to give birth or who has a cardiac arrest going on, you can say, you know what, take a hike down the road. Let me tell you a little story real quickly about what happened to me and my wife years ago when the hospital wouldn't see my wife. She had gallstones so bad she was in screaming pain. Went to a hospital in Modesto, California, which basically served all of the criminal aliens in that area. So the triage nurse said, her pain isn't bad enough to put her up front, so we're going to put her at the rear behind these Mexicans that have splinters or who have bumped their toes. So I got pissed at that. My wife said, no, that's fine. It's not going to be too long. 2 hours later, with my wife still moaning and crying, I said, that's it. You take my wife in now, or I'm going to make you take my wife in now. And the nurse in charge said, well, what do you think you can do? So I went out and I got my 45. Before I could come back in, my wife ran out and said, no, don't. I don't want to read about us in the paper tomorrow. So we went back in, and a doctor had heard her screaming and crying. So he came out on his own volition and took her into the back. I can tell you the truth. If he hadn't have, they'll be taking some other person in the back for acute gunshot wound, and I'm not BSing you. I mean, when it gets to the point where this psychosis affects me or mine, I lose all sense of humor, and the fact that people think that I'm civilized goes right out the door. And that's going to be happening. There's no question about that. Now, let's see. Governor, the commie governor, Phil Murphy, he hidden. In all of his writings and stuff all of his executive orders is the fact that as soon as he's reelected, and we're still not sure what the hell's going on with that, he's going to be doing a vaccination mandate in New Jersey. Oh, you know they have a green pass in the UK, right? Isn't that cool? They got a green pass in the UK. It's so you can go, come and go, and nobody will worry that you're not infected or you don't have the shot or something like that. Well, the green pass has been hacked, and so far, there's been a half a dozen names that have popped up with an actual pass, and the most prevalent one has been Adolf Hitler. Yeah. The CEO of Pfizer wants to vaccinate every child in the United States. Do you really think this is just money? You know, do you really think it's all about money? I don't know. It could be. But Pfizer's going all out to even convince the children that they need to get this vaccination.
Getting ready to fight COVID.
All of us want to be superheroes. And the most important heroes are those that help others. This year, thousands of kids like us around the world joined the COVID-19 vaccine trial.
Kid Power.
And when they did, they became all superheroes. Ah! All the kids who volunteer, we'd like to say
thank you.
Thank you for sharing your superpowers of
courage,
trying new things,
the ability to save people,
the power to help people,
helping not just yourself but many other kids.
To not be scared,
be strong,
super brave,
bravery and courage,
a superhero shot,
helping everybody.
Fight coronavirus and help others.
You're helping the whole entire world.
Thank you. You are all superheroes.
Thank you.
Thank you, superheroes.
Thank you.
You're awesome.
Considering the fact these children didn't volunteer for anything, their stupid, insane parents did. And they said, Lev, if my kid lives, that's good. So go ahead. I can pop another one out. Stick it in his arm. And that's exactly what they did. Do you know Pfizer changed the kid formula? It's not the normal thing. As a matter of fact, this formula has a drug in it to stabilize somebody when they're having a cardiac arrest. It is called trimethamine. Its short name is TRIS, T-R-I-S. So why would they have to put that in a children's vaccine? It's because the kids are going to be having... They're going to be having cardiac arrests. They're going to be having problems. It's happening already. A school in Hawaii, which is basically controlled by the communists, have decided they're going to have a vaccination push in the school so all of the children can get their vaccines. And they named a couple days that they're going to have this push, and they don't need two things. They don't need permission from the parents, and they don't want the parents there either. They don't want the parents there. Isn't that cute? So they're going to jab some stuff into your child's arm, and they're going to wait then to see if he lives. And if he does, then he'll release you they'll release him to the parents, okay? Tests have come out, reports have come out, studies have come out, something known as spontaneous abortion. If you're stupid enough and you're pregnant and you get this so-called vaccine, you have an 88% chance of what they call spontaneous abortion or miscarriage in English. Now, here's something that they discovered in all hospitals. The mortality risk from COVID-19 correlates inversely with vitamin D3 status. In other words, the lower your levels of vitamin D3, the higher chance you have of succumbing to this influenza. Take D3, like crazy. And studies have also come out and shown there's no ifs, ands, or buts. Ivermectin protects you 86%. And if you are sick, 67% of the people that take ivermectin survive perfectly. The main thing that I've been seeing and watching all throughout this, especially in areas, in fact, only in areas that are controlled by communists, is that they want two classes of people. And the funny thing is, the Democrats, which are supposed to be the ones that are pro-black and that are for equality and against segregation, are the ones pushing this. So they have their I don't know what word to call them. Grandpa used to call them trained monkeys. And these are the blacks that just do exactly what the Democrats tell them to do and vote the way the Democrats tell them to vote. You got them out there saying, you know, y'all need to be wear a gold armband, or you need to have a star on your head, or you need to have numbers on your arm, or you need to have a cell phone that has a special thing in there that says that you're not vaxxed, so you can't go into certain stores, you know, like the blacks used to not be able to go into certain stores, or the Jews in Germany. Isn't it funny that they actually, they're pushing for two classes of people in the United States?
Today, we're facing a major problem in the world where there's some people who are so close-minded and bigoted that they're against segregating society into two classes of citizens. Meanwhile, New Zealand, UK, and Canadian leaders have finally quit beating around the bush and announced that they are, in fact, creating two classes of citizens. And I'm feeling safer already. And in the US, other white people named Biden and Fauci are doing their best to do the same. They're just one problem. Unfortunately, in the US, there's a movement opposing segregating society. It's actually arising all over the world, and to be honest with you, it pisses me off. These dangerous far-right extremists are putting us all at risk of being treated fairly. These bigots want equal rights for everyone? They're terrorists. They're so blinded by their hate for inhumane treatment of people that they don't realize the truth of the matter, which is that some of us are a little more equal than others, and we should be treated accordingly. And I don't think that's too much to ask. I mean, you can just look at the history of segregating a society into two classes, which proves that having two classes in society is the right way to move forward into a bright, prosperous future that works out really well for everyone. But these terrorists just ignore the history. I mean, think about it. In the U.S., we've been deprived of segregation since the 1960s when Martin Luther King Jr. led the Civil Rights Revolution and ended it, assisted by fellow extremist Rosa Parks. But before that, in the good old days, we had the safety and protection of having two classes of citizens. Because luckily, in 1865, laws were passed which restricted the rights of black people living in the South, including mandates on where they could live and mandates on where they could work. I mean, excuse me, unless I'm just a moron here, having two classes of citizens was a very effective way of telling black people you're a lesser class of citizen, and therefore have less rights. But then Martin Luther King had a plot to end segregation, and they succeeded. I mean, look at the world ever since. Black people and white people just live together as a united people. And another example, even before all that, we had laws that honored the fact that women are second-class citizens. Because how else are they going to know? They were put in their place. They couldn't vote or do much else other than make babies and have their man's drink ready when he came home from work. But we've lost sight of this truth. And now society is plagued by the dangers of us just pretending that women are equal to men. Everyone suffers. Same class of citizen? Really? Women don't even have penises. Another example of the success of creating two classes of citizens is in the 1930s when the Hitler-led Nazis did it in Germany. You had the superior race, and then, as Hitler would say, You had the dirty Jews. Allow them to eat in the same place as normal people? Gross. The Nazis were smart enough to indoctrinate their citizens into believing they could catch diseases from being around this lower class of citizen. It's science. Kind of like how Biden and Fauci routinely inform us that we're at risk of catching diseases from a certain class of people. It's science. But I will say, bathrooms are one area that segregation has no place. All people should be able to use all bathrooms, because all people are capable of being any gender at any given time. I stand for unity in restrooms and segregation in society. Back to history. China's been really good at recognizing second-class groups of people. They got the Uyghurs in concentration camps as we speak. Protect the rest of their citizens from making contact with them. China's willingness to do the right thing with the Tibetans can inspire all of us to a better way of life. I just think it's unfortunate that the Dalai Lama got away. I mean, how much better off would the world be without that second-class citizen floating around? And then you have an extremist like Gandhi. I mean, amongst his other crimes against humanity, he ended Britain's discrimination against the Dalitas people, who Britain considered to be the lowest class of people in India. Gandhi's dangerous ideals had him harming society by advocating that everyone be treated with love, respect, and equality. It makes me so angry that he could even get away with that. Gandhi is such an idiot. A united society is not a controllable society. The history is very clear. Anytime you have two classes of people, good is happening and the world's becoming a better place. And anytime you have unity and equality, evil is flourishing and the world's becoming a terrible place. And to the naysayers who are like, ooh, having two classes of citizens destroys a democracy. Well, you know what? We have a really good reason for having two classes of people. And it's almost like these naysayers completely don't understand that white lawmakers in 1865 had really good reasons too. And the Nazis had really good reasons as well. So with where we're at today, are you going to accept a segregated society, or are you going to refuse to comply with it? Well, you have to ask yourself this question. Do you want to align with the policies of humanitarians like Hitler and the Nazis, racist white lawmakers in 1865, the Chinese Communist Party, and Biden and Fauci, all of whom just wanted to protect their people by creating a second class of citizens with restricted rights? Or do you want to align yourself with dangerous extremists who ended segregation and championed unity and equality, like Martin Luther King, Rosa Parks, the Dalai Lama, and Gandhi? Because you just got to think, what if the world never had these people? How much better off would we be? And now you get to choose.
Now we're going into food category real quick here. If you go do any shopping, I don't need to tell you, prices are going up. It's not just these little things that are annoying right now in the grocery stores. Worldwide, when a company says, okay, I need 50,000 tons of wheat, or I need 1,000 cattle carcasses, it's not being available. They can't find this stuff. It's getting worse and worse. Meat prices are becoming WTF. You walk in the store, you will be saying WTF when you look at the prices of this stuff. And it is not going to get any better. Wheat prices are skyrocketing worldwide. So I used to bitch when I had to pay $2 for a loaf of bread, and then I bitched when it was $3. Now you're going to be looking at $5 to $10 a loaf for bread.
Around the world, farmers are having trouble getting the supplies they need in order to produce food. Now, I've already shared in a previous report that tale from the German farmer who said, I can't find fertilizer, and if I don't have it, like, yes, I'll go out of business, but moreover, we won't have wheat next year. We won't be able to eat bread next year. But it's not just in Germany. Today, I want to take a look also at Brazil, where they're in a crisis mode because of the lack of fertilizers, to the United States, to Canada, to India, where the government has set up a war room to monitor the real-time availability, allocations, and distribution of fertilizers. Distributions, I should say, which are happening under the strict watch of police personnel, of armed guards, to keep farmers from rioting and taking the fertilizer that they need for their crops. Because that's how advanced and severe this situation is that the government is literally on a day-to-day basis triaging which crops need the fertilizer more, which are more important. And that necessarily leaves some farmers out to dry. It also means, as countries are seeing this happen, that many are taking steps to stop exporting their own food supplies. From Ukraine to Russia to Argentina, all have been instituting higher duties, making it more expensive to import from them, or just setting limits, setting quotas on how much they will even be willing to export. So the supplies are diminishing, and countries are starting to guard this precious supply of food. All of this, stepping back, was described by the food chain reaction game, which, just as Event 201 or the Rockefellers' lockstep document foresaw and laid out a script that we then experienced during the COVID-19 pandemic, so too does the food chain reaction game, financed by George Soros, including Cargill, one of the world's biggest food companies, and executed by John Podesta. Food chain reaction game foresaw a period in the future when, due to global warming and nationalists acting on behalf of their own country instead of sharing the food with other countries, there would be a period of drastically increasing food prices and famine and tremendous geopolitical instability resulting from that. We are now walking through that script. The food chain reaction game, simulation, war game, tabletop exercise, whatever you want to call it, ended in the institution of a global carbon tax, which is exactly what they want. It's exactly what the folks over at COP26, the climate conference, are talking about right now, as well as the takeover of the food supply. We've seen from Unilever talking about how we need to stop eating meat. Boris Johnson said the same thing. We're going to move to these bioengineered burgers. All of these things are launching into hyperdrive, forward, implement now as quickly as possible, shove it down, quite literally shove it down your throat mode. And there's a reason for that. And that reason, as this gentleman said on a recent CNBC interview, I think he's right. If, due to the food prices rising and the energy crisis, Europeans are forced to choose between heating and eating, that will be the end of the green movement. No one at that point will be willing to further prostrate themselves before the cult of global warming. And so this is that moment. This is that time when all of these things, the fake food made from carbon monoxide, the genetically engineered crops that people really don't want, but governments are now launching anyway, and of course, the censorship right now, where journalists who are critical of these things, or of the medical mandates for that matter, are literally being jailed and having their bank accounts taken from them. Because of course, as these crises materialize, people are going to look for answers. And so voices like this one will no longer be available to be heard. And in fact, there are already signs that many people, including especially farmers, are beginning to figure out that there is a war going on them, on food production, in the name of climate change and global warming. People are waking up, which is the other reason that they have to push all of this forward as quickly as possible. And I want to start in Brazil, where, as I said, they are in crisis mode, much like India. In Brazil, quote, the crises over the delivery of fertilizers and herbicides is getting worse by the minute. Farmers have been reporting a shortage of all types of herbicides, especially glyphosate, glufosinate, and pre-emergence. The lack of these products is now a matter of national alarm. Again, we've heard someone else say these attacks on our food supply are a matter of national security. Factories, quote, are shutting down around the world, including the US and China. Sellers are still selling crop inputs, but there's no guarantee that the product will even be delivered. The situation is even more pronounced in India, where they get most of those phosphates from China, who just said, whoa, we're not going to export anymore. China just turned off the tap. This is completely warfare on food production. And so, as I mentioned, India set up a war room to monitor the movement and distribution of fertilizers. Quote, this level of minute planning and prioritization of fertilizer movement by the center is happening for the first time in response to an unprecedented shortage situation, both domestic but also worldwide. I think it's important to note that these farmers are literally fighting with their lives to try and get the fertilizers to be able to keep their own farms running. The government has so far categorically denied that there's any shortage of fertilizer, even as they put police out there stationed with the fertilizers to keep farmers from taking it. So, quote, an acute shortage of diammonium phosphate, DAP, has seen desperate farmers throwing stones at the police, blocking the roads in protest, and even resorting to trying to steal, loot, the fertilizer from outlets. Though the government has so far denied the shortage, it's being distributed from police stations under the strict watch of police personnel. The shortage of DAP has already become a big issue in South Haryana, where it is known for its cultivation of mustard crops, with panic already spreading among the farmers. The shortage is the fallout out of less imports in the wake of a spurt in the global prices of DAP. With farmers preempting a shortage, videos of long lines of people wanting to buy phosphates have started to go viral on social media. The situation is going from bad to worse. Quote, whenever there are rumors of shortages, farmers start seeking fertilizers for next year, too. We have reports of black markets emerging in the fertilizer areas. To keep check on this fertilizer smuggling, we only give it to farmers after checking their documents. But that actually makes the whole thing worse, because then there's a line to get your documents checked. So the farmers are now waiting in line for hours just to get a couple bags of fertilizer. 2,000 farmers were standing there waiting for DAP until 7 p.m., which means they're not working on their farms. You can see this is a disaster. That day, 1,000 policemen were deployed to ensure the smooth distribution of DAP bags in the district as it was distributed from police stations. But don't worry, there's no shortage, according to the government. I think this is pretty indicative of just how severe the situation is. Farmers are also telling the government, stop exporting our soybean meal. We need it to be able to feed our crops. And that's actually happened. Indian soy meal exports fell 47% month over month from September because there's a shortage of product. There's no soybeans there, soybean meal there to export. In the United States, we can read farmers hearing from a lot of farmers. In previous times, they say, the USDA is lying and that means that prices are bad, market manipulation, it's really economic warfare, it makes my job hard, it's making, I don't have any profits left. But now the story has changed to fear. One of, there's not going to be any food next year. I can't get fertilizers. I can't get the pesticides. I can't get parts for my tractors or my combines. My farm has been shut down because I can't even get calls back from my suppliers. I wish I could convey to you the sense of urgency in these farmers' voices and with their level of awareness of what this means in the months ahead. There will not be food there for to eat. I've already shared in a previous report those studies that say without artificial fertilizers, 50% of the world yields would just be gone and half the world would perish overnight. That's what I mean when I say they are turning off the switch on the global food production system. And I've heard already from people, spare me, saying, oh good, there's no glyphosates, Roundup is bad, screw Monsanto. Yeah, I get it. Everyone watching this understands that, right? We're already pretty clued in. We want good, clean, organic food. That's why our hands are so dirty from growing it for our families. But this is still how food is grown for the vast majority of people on Earth. And so when we see this tap being shut off, here from AgriPulse.com talking about the situation in the U.S., quote, farmers are being hit from all sides with increased production costs. Two of the expenses responsible for the most volatility and uncertainty are fertilizers and pesticides. Whether it's the Chinese driving up the global cost of phosphorus, IDA's impact on glyphosate and nitrogen production, tariffs on ammonium nitrate from Russia, or sanctions on potash from Belarus, American farmers are bracing to sacrifice profits next year for the inputs they need for their crops. It also means food prices, already at decadal highs, will continue to skyrocket, and people will not be able to afford their food. Quote, everything is getting harder and harder to get, according to a rice and bean farmer in Louisiana. Never had an issue before, but now the cost of doing business is just getting worse and worse. What are we telling our clients for the future? Expect more volatility. There are essentially three kinds of synthetic fertilizers, nitrogens, phosphates, and potash, and the markets for all of them are in complete disarray. China accounts for 28% of global phosphate exports, but they banned exports of it. They turned off the tap. China, really, really a key player in this NWO agenda. They have stopped exporting. That's why India went into panic mode. That is creating global scarcity and driving up prices for American farmers, even though they don't buy from China. Here from Progressive Farmer is more about the phosphate shortage that was created by virtue of these new tariffs. A 19% tariff on phosphates from Morocco. They're actually petitioning the U.S. Court of International Trade to get rid of that because it's ruining production of food. But again, it takes all of these things working together to create this orchestrated collapse of food production. And here from AgWeb, glyphosate prices soar as much as 300%, and that's if you can even get it. And you hear from farmer after farmer, the input price scenario for 2022 is growing more complicated and scary by the day. Farmers are preparing. From nitrogen to glyphosate, prices are posting 100 to 300% increases right now. Farmers are also saying they can't even get retailers to give them prices on the products. They can't even get quotes until the products arrive, and that's questionable if that will even happen. Again, I hate glyphosate. I'd love to see that stuff eliminated, but not until everyone has an organic garden in their backyard, right? Not while it still means global famine. Now again, prices for food have already been rising ridiculously. Wheat now at a decadal high. Priciest wheat since 2012 threatens to worsen food inflation. It will. That's happening both because of bad harvests, strained global supplies collide with robust demand and poor harvests, as well as new export quotas in Russia and in Ukraine. Right here, Ministry of Agrarian Policy of Ukraine agreed on limiting how much wheat they're going to export in the next year. This just happened last week. Everyone is figuring out what's going on and trying to hold on to whatever they can to feed their people. Argentina, the government slaps more controls on their corn exports. We don't have enough to share it. Quote, since April with meat, when they stopped exporting Argentine beef, and now with corn, according to the ag minister, we have upped the number of requirements and restrictions on our corn exports after we already reached our limit. In Canada, Canadian National Railways has actually ended their freight forwarding. They did this without any warning whatsoever, and that means that there are farmers and producers and grain co-ops who all planned on selling their grains or even sold it and are trying to ship it, but they can't. They stopped providing service to farmers. So if you read, the move will affect an unknown number of Western Canadian companies that usually ship raw or value-added ag commodities to overseas buyers. Existing containers that were already packed will be handled and loaded onto outbound ocean vessels, but new service will not be offered, and unfilled container orders already on the books have been canceled. You're not exporting your grains. Quote, Canadian National Railroad has shut down their freight forwarding business with no notice to consumers. Nobody saw this coming. Anything that happened inside CN, which was the international freight forwarding side, it's done. It's over. As of today, I don't know where we're going to load containers, because in fact, while there are other companies that could provide freight forwarding services, those companies are so far booked out that you would need to book them 3 months in advance. So Canada grains, they're not moving. North American grains are sitting there. They're not getting to the rest of the world. This is going to create some extreme short-term pain, spoken from the perspective of the people that are trying to export their product so their business continue. It will also create some extreme pain for the rest of the world, clearly, that depends on those imports. And I also wanted to mention, grain transportation by rail has been challenged by uncertain supply, because a lot of people are blaming supply chain or this or that, and all of these things, certainly it's a confluence of things, but this article makes it very clear that the reason that Canadian National had such a poor year, they've only been shipping 79 to 88% of their trains loaded with grains. And it's very clearly stated, this is because grain volumes have not been steady. The grain flow from country elevators has fluctuated with the unevenness of the grain supply because of the questionable harvest. And I just wanted to make sure to include this point. This is not strictly some supply chain disruption. This is a continuing story of changing climate conditions, the grand solar minimum affecting crop yields. And then that trickles down. And then the railroad doesn't know when their trains can go because they don't know when they can get the grains. And then they just shut down the shipping service altogether. Now there's no exports. It is a cascading series of failures, massive, massive failures at this point that the world is experiencing. And I would say it was unheard of, except we have heard it before. We did hear it before in the food chain reaction game script. There's only one country that has not stopped exporting. In fact, that increased our exports of food to record levels, most of it going to China, and that is, of course, the United States. We have been hollowed out. They have taken our soybeans, our corn, then they started purchasing the wheat when they reformulated their animal feed. It's the same story here from the Wall Street Journal. You can see it's the same story for propane. Prepare for the sticker shock. Exports have already drained our domestic supply ahead of the heating season, and now prices are surging. What happened, USA? Why did you export all your food right before all of these problems happened? Why did you export all your propane right before the biggest energy crisis in history? It's because the U.S. is being driven into the ground. It's being smashed to bits. But it is a global problem, right? The U.S. is the breadbasket of the world, exporting. It's one of the top exporters for most of these agricultural commodities. And so you'll see food prices rising around the world, if not shortages straight up. Here from the Bloomberg chief energy correspondent, European milling wheat is now at an all-time high price. And that is what led to this gentleman saying, at this point, we're going to have to be choosing between whether or not we have heat in our homes or we can eat. If that happens, it will be the end of the green movement. Again, that's why this is just the first step of an all-out unleashing of war. In fact, we heard Prince Charles declare war right yesterday. He said it's going to take a military-style operation. We're going to get rid of global warming, top-down. Forget the governments. This is bigger than that. It's bigger than the GDPs. It's bigger than the leaders. This is a multi-trillion-dollar military-style operation to kill global warming. Again, we've heard this script before. That's how we can recognize it. That's how we know it's being done on purpose. And that's how we know what to expect from it. What kind of solutions they will propose in their Hegelian problem reaction solution. When John Podesta stood on that podium and said, we're all going to run out of food unless we front run this crisis and start putting on carbon taxes now. He did so in concert with Cargill, one of the biggest food companies in the world. And here from Cargill.com directly, food chain reaction crisis simulation ends with its global carbon tax. The game took the players between 2020 to 2030, this exactly the decade of action that the UN is talking about, throwing their sustainable development goals into high gear, one of which is food security. And the Pope just said that's the biggest problem we have to solve. This is why Greta is talking about her new goal is to shape food production. Again, with the food chain reaction game projected that the decade brought two major food crises. Prices went up 400%, a raft of climate-related extreme weather events, geopolitical instabilities, famine, and refugee crises. And if you watch their original video, it included a pandemic. They've stripped that out of the verbiage here now.
The new normal is volatility.
They were working with Cargill, the WWF, the Center for American Progress, which is John Podesta's organization, and even the Center for Naval Analyses with the people who organized the food chain and reaction game. Cargill, of course, one of the World Economic Forum's principal partners, the World Economic Forum, who has announced that we need to radically transform the way we grow and consume food, working also in cahoots with the Eat Lancet Commission, with their planetary health diet, and the Lancet Commission put out Great Transition Forward, focusing principally on how to change how we grow food. It's staggering when you realize that these same actors were involved with the simulations and now with the engineering of the crisis and are also suggesting the carbon taxes. Cargill also happens to be the company that has stopped paying farmers even after taking their grain deliveries. Cargill is apologizing to farmers, quote, for payment delays caused by an update to our computer systems. We recognize this has been an incredible disruption. Sorry, farmers, we can't get our computers to work. We're just not going to pay you for the grains. We already took delivery from you. Probably a small thing in comparison to this larger situation, but still emblematic of how Cargill is attacking farmers, is hollowing out the world food supply. Here from Forbes is the conclusion of the food chain reaction game, written by a Cargill director himself. Climate change could destabilize the global food system, but there are some ways we can keep that from happening. If we, for example, invest in smart agricultural technology, in other words, the fake lab-grown meat and the bug burgers and the genetically modified crops, all this synthetic nasty food, that, as I call it, the transhumanist food, divorcing people from nature and from God. But continuing from Forbes, quote, the most eye-catching results, however, were a deal to institute a worldwide carbon tax and then a new global governance structure for climate and food security issues. Just like the global governance committees that are being set up right now and discussed at COP26. We are walking through the script that they have put in place for this. They crafted it over the last few decades. They waited, they planned, and now, especially as the sun went into a grand solar minimum and disrupted the very stable growing seasons, they knew this. They had to do this now. They had to take over the food supply. And so we also see right now, going into high gear, October 25th, anti-cancer bread, super tomatoes. These are the genetically modified foods that could transform our health. We just saw the World Economic Forum announce this nano dust that could be used for food safety. Well, that was something that I covered 6 months ago, talking about biobarcodes and these GMO spores that they would hide in food in order to trace it from the farm to the shelves to you, and then eventually through the sewers. It's complete monitoring of the food supply chain. We see China yesterday unveiling a new protein for livestock, because they've already sucked up all the world's supplies of agricultural commodities to try and feed their animals. So now we'll just synthesize a single cell organism from carbon monoxide and use that as protein to feed our animals. This is disgusting. I saw Vandana Shiva say today, this is an assault on the creation, on the way that God works. To feed bioengineered, nasty, synthetic food to animals is an atrocity. And it also, of course, sets the stage for doing the same thing for humans in the years to come as we go through this great transition. We also saw Unilever take the stage at COP26 today and announce that we really need to get rid of livestock farming, right? This war on meat that we've heard from Bill Gates and the Impossible Foods CEO. It's the game over for meat. They don't even realize it yet. That's the agenda. Unilever, of course, another strategic partner of the World Economic Forum, sitting there orchestrating this whole thing. Even Boris Johnson got on the action today saying that we need to start looking into eating bioengineered burgers. In fact, quote, humanity will soon abandon eating meat in favor of lab-grown, eco-friendly alternatives in a drastic bid to save the planet. There it is. That's our altruistic goal. We're going to save the world by forcing you to eat bugs. And of course, this is all going to feed back into the circular economy. As food becomes more scarce, they will say, we've already seen China with their Clean Your Plate initiative, saying we're going to dock your social credit score if you throw away food or if you eat too big a pizza and we catch you on social media. We're going to delete your post. That's already gone. They're censoring whatever that weird trend is where you show pictures of yourself eating giant bowls of food. They've started ending that. And now they're even doubling down just yesterday, November 1st, just yesterday. China is strengthening the push to reduce food waste. China will strengthen efforts to reduce the amount of grain lost at harvest and food wasted in kitchens across the country. Because it's you, it's your fault. You are the one that is causing the global warming and the food wastage and all of these problems. And if we only took better control of you, then none of us would have these problems. That's always, since the Club of Rome, that is the formula for this whole dialectic. China launched the major campaign against food waste last year, Clean Your Plate initiative, and efforts have achieved tangible results so far, but more can be done. More can always be done. None of us are safe until we're all safe. So, the animal sector is being encouraged to use more corn and soy meal substitutes and reduce the protein levels. That's a very key phrase. Reduce the protein levels. Fill people up with carbs, deprive them of the healthy fats and the proteins that make your brain work and build strong bodies. We don't want capable people. We don't want thinkers or fighters or doers or well-rounded humans at all. We just want slaves. Remember Bertrand Russell. It is a combination of diet, injections, and injunctions that will render humanity into this amorphous blob that we can do whatever we want with. Diet, injection, and injunctions. And boy, if we don't see all of those going into hyperdrive right now. And again, all of this is also going to be coupled because people are waking up. You got the farmers saying, holy crap, they're putting us out of business. This is a program. It's not just the carbon taxes that they put on us in Canada and other places. They're shutting us down. And they're creating fake meat to replace us. So people are waking up, not just farmers. Everyone is waking up faster than I think ever before in history. And that's why they're also doubling down on the censorship. You've seen Google saying, we're going to get anyone that denies global warming and cow farts. We're going to just get rid of that off YouTube and off Google search results. Those opinions should no longer be available. We'll just deplatform them because we don't want people to find real answers when they start running out of food and wondering why. They can only have visibility into the programs we want them to see, which is, again, it's your fault, right? It's because you have a car. It's because you took that trip on an airplane. We're going to end that. We're going to get rid of your cars. We're going to get rid of air travel. We're going to stop this whole shipping industry. Remember the absolute zero agenda that we looked into, line by line, going down how we're going to get rid of heaters and fireplaces, and you'll be forced to install a heat pump at your own expense. In fact, I'll leave it there.
The Ice Age farmer has so much more data to show what's happening and what's going to be happening. You have to understand everything that you're hearing, not just from me or from him or from anyone else. There's about a 3 month to 6 month communication lag from when you're told to when it happens. That's theoretically. Most of the time it's like that. Sometimes it's so fast that we don't have even a chance to breathe before it's upon us.
What are they trying to do?
That's the missing piece.
But it's not hard to imagine a government hiding, hoarding alien technology for 70 years at the expense of human life and the future of the planet. Driven not only by corporate greed, but a darker objective.
The takeover of America.
And then the world itself, by any means necessary, however violent or cruel or efficient. By severe drought brought on by weather wars conducted secretly using aerial contaminants and high-altitude electromagnetic waves in a state of perpetual war to create problem, reaction, solution scenarios to distract, enrage, and enslave American citizens at home with tools like the Patriot Act and the National Defense Authorization Act, which abridge the Constitution in the name of national security. The militarization of police forces in cities across the U.S., the building of prison camps by the Federal Emergency Management Agency with no stated purpose, the corporate takeover of food and agriculture, pharmaceuticals and healthcare, even the military in clandestine agendas to fatten, dull, sicken, and control a populace already consumed by consumerism. A government that taps your phone, collects your data, and monitors your whereabouts with impunity. A government preparing to use that data against you when it strikes and the final takeover begins.
The takeover of America.
By a well-oiled and well-armed multinational group of elites that will cull, kill, and subjugate.
The communists in charge of the United States right now don't have time to dilly-dally around. They have to get everything done as quickly as they can, because pretty soon that these frogs out here that are slowly being boiled in the pot are going to find out that they're being boiled in the pot, and they're going to rise up. Well, they got to get all their crap done before that's even going to happen. The category we're in is government threat, obviously. I have a bunch of articles here. They're in no special order, okay? When the communists pulled out of Afghanistan and made sure to arm the Taliban, they also left all kinds of intelligence. And now the Taliban's making use of the intelligence. See, in Islam, it's not acceptable to be a homosexual or a lesbian. It's okay to have sex with a male if you're a male, but there's rules behind it, okay? Anyway, so they left a bunch of lists. And one of them was everybody in the Afghani community that was a sexual pervert. So Taliban's going door to door, finding these perverts and killing them. There's no court. It's just, boom, you're dead. Well, let's see. Supreme Court denied relief to religious exemptions for Maine healthcare workers. And who are the two people that pushed this? Was Barrett and Kavanaugh, the two so-called conservatives. Treason is happening all over in every facet of this government. In fact, the pervert in charge of transportation, Pete the pervert, he said that the supply chain issues won't end until the pandemic ends, and that's going to end when everybody's vaccinated. Everybody. Keyword, everybody. China is warning its citizens, stock up food, stockpile necessities, it's saying. Stockpile necessities as quickly as possible. I wonder what that would mean. You got any clue there? I do. It's called war. The campaign in New Jersey to defeat the Senate President Sweeney, a well-known communist there, a guy named Edward Doerr, campaigned. Now, everything said he campaigned on less than $153 and he won. Well, he didn't. It was about $2,000, and he came out and corrected that. He don't know where that came from. But he ran. He's a truck driver, and he's tired of the crap that's going on in New Jersey. So he ran against this commie that's in charge of the Senate there, and he won, except you're going to love this one. They came out the other day and said, oh, we found a whole bunch of ballots that we forgot to count. Well, we'll see what happens with that one. The first black woman elected to statewide office in Virginia is a Republican named Winsome Sears, ex-military, with a perfect picture of her holding a, looked like about a 24-inch long AR-15. Okay, but you understand, that she's a racist. Okay, every person that won any of the political races, politicians, anybody that won that's a Republican is a white supremacist and a racist. Doesn't matter if you're Mexican, if you're black, brown, white, you're automatically a racist. I'm sure most of you've heard of QAnon. From the beginning, I said I don't. People ask, what do you think of them? I said, I don't think anything of them. It sounds like a bunch of hogwash to me. QAnon always has been. There was an interview with the founder of QAnon who said, no, just me and a buddy of mine, we're just having fun. It's nothing new. Let me tell you some of the things that people out there have been soaking up for the past couple years. All of these things, and I've warned, people send me an email saying, this is happening. And I send them an email back saying, no, it's not. That's bogus. That's phony as hell. Let me read you some of this hopium, okay, that has been put out. Patriots are in control. The swamp will be drained in 2 weeks. Hillary will be locked up in 2 weeks. Sealed indictments in 2 weeks. Military tribunal in 2 weeks. Deep state put in Gitmo in 2 weeks. 2 weeks. 2 weeks. Arizona audit bombshell in 2 weeks. McAfee bombshell in 2 weeks. Biden resigning in 2 weeks. Trump back in 2 weeks. And why do they say 2 weeks? Because in psychological warfare, it takes 2 weeks for people to forget. QAnon was a CIA operation. It was created and ran to give people hopium, hope. It was so outrageously stupid that I'm astounded that anybody with any critical thinking ability would fall for this crap. Unfortunately, too many people fall for it. And then they end up... This is a whole psyop. It was trained and planned, and operation was perfect. It did exactly what they wanted it to do. They wanted to separate the Patriot movement from those who could critically think and those who were just want to follow and hope. And that's the whole idea. Another thing happened this week.
By making this statement, I am putting myself at great risk because on November 4th, Project Veritas came under attack. I woke to the news that apartments and homes of Project Veritas journalists, or former journalists, had been raided by FBI agents. It appears the Southern District of New York now has journalists in their sights for the supposed crime of doing their jobs lawfully and honestly, or at least this journalist. I had to think long and hard before making this statement. It's a decision that only I can make. They don't want me to defend myself and immediately tried to silence me. That's why the cover letter to the grand jury subpoena we received contains this language. Quote, "The government hereby requests that you voluntarily refrain from disclosing the existence of the subpoena to any third party. While you are under no obligation to comply with our request, we are requesting you not to make any disclosure in order to preserve the confidentiality of the investigation and because the disclosure of the existence of this investigation might interfere with and impede the investigation," unquote. But while the Department of Justice requested us to not disclose the existence of the subpoena, something very unusual happened. Within an hour of one of our reporters' homes being secretly raided by the FBI, the New York Times, who we are currently suing for defamation, contacted the Project Veritas reporter to ask for comment. We do not know how the New York Times was aware of the execution of a search warrant at our reporter's home or the subject matter of the search warrant, as a grand jury investigation is secret. The FBI took materials of current former Project Veritas journalists, despite the fact that our legal team previously contacted the Department of Justice and voluntarily conveyed unassailable facts that demonstrate Project Veritas's lack of involvement in criminal activity and or criminal intent. Like any reporter, we regularly deal with the receipt of source information and take steps to verify its authenticity, legality, and newsworthiness. Our efforts were the stuff of responsible, ethical journalism, and we are in no doubt that Project Veritas acted properly at each and every step. However, it appears journalism itself may now be on trial. Late last year, we were approached by tipsters claiming that a copy of Ashley Biden's diary. We had never met or heard of the tipsters. The tipsters indicated the diary had been abandoned in a room in which Ms. Biden stayed at the time, and in which the tipsters stayed in temporarily after Ms. Biden departed the room. The tipsters indicated that the diary included explosive allegations against then-candidate Joe Biden. The tipsters indicated that they were negotiating with a different media outlet for the payment of monies for the diary. The tipsters were represented by attorneys who handled the negotiations with Project Veritas. We investigated the claims provided to us, as journalists do. We took steps to corroborate the authenticity of the diary. At the end of the day, we made the ethical decision that because, in part, we could not determine if the diary was real, if the diary in fact belonged to Ashley Biden, or if the contents of the diary occurred, we could not publish the diary in any part thereof. We attempted to return the diary to an attorney representing Ms. Biden, but that attorney refused to authenticate it. Project Veritas gave the diary to law enforcement to ensure it could be returned to its rightful owner. We never published it. Now, Ms. Biden's father's Department of Justice, specifically the United States Attorney's Office for the Southern District of New York, appears to be investigating the situation, claiming the diary was stolen. We don't know if it was, but it begs the question, in what world is the alleged theft of a diary investigated by the president's FBI and his Department of Justice? A diary? This federal investigation smacks of politics. Project Veritas never threatened or engaged in any illegal conduct. Should the Southern District of New York try to take away our First Amendment rights and uncover and publish newsworthy stories without government intimidation, be assured, Project Veritas will not back down. Nothing stops at Project Veritas. Let me be clear. Our mission is to serve the public's right to know by illuminating, revealing, exposing information others wish to hide for the wrong reasons. To quote Lord Acton, we believe everything kept in secret degenerates. We don't mislead or conceal. We investigate facts and potential newsworthy information. Sometimes, as was the case here, after we investigate, we decide not to publish a news story. But Project Veritas will run from nothing and we will hide from nothing. We exist for the very purpose of discovering and revealing the truth and hope to make the world a more transparent place. Now, this is not the first time we have been attacked, and it will not be the last. We know why. We've investigated powerful people, and in many ways, we are the very tip of the spear. But we never break the law. In fact, one of our ethical rules is to act as if there are 12 jurors on our shoulders all the time. And that truth, and the truth, will vindicate us. When the FBI and the Southern District of New York seize reporters' notebooks, it is not just an attack on Project Veritas. It is an attack on every American and our sacred right to free speech and a free press. The First Amendment is first for a reason. It guarantees all the other rights that follow. Because it's all about accountability. Without accountability, freedom itself is an illusion. So the great question is this an indicator in the direction that America is going? We've gone far beyond the point of partisan politics in this country. They ask us to focus on our divisions. They don't ask us to focus on the things which unite us. What unites us is so much more powerful than what divides us. The First Amendment doesn't just matter to people on one side. It matters to people on all sides. That is why I'm calling on all Americans, and especially all journalists, to stand with us for the right to free speech and the free press, and to send a message that the politics of fear will not prevail in the United States of America.
See, the diary he's talking about is from Biden's daughter, named Ashley Biden. And she, in her diary, said things like he would do inappropriate things with her and have take showers with her when she was a child. And this more and more, there was a lot of disgusting stuff in there. And like they said, like he said, it was brought to him and he refused to print it. Well, it was given to some other places, which did verify the fact that that is and was her diary. And everything she said in it, as far as she knew, was true. So apparently, realizing the deep state needs to protect all the communists that are in charge, because that's how the deep state exists. The deep state is every agency in the federal government. That is the deep state. It is not some Illuminati guy hiding up on a hill somewhere. It's these bastards that are in every one of these agencies, including the FBI. The FBI is so corrupt. Them and the IRS are the two most laughed at organizations on earth. If you really want to embarrass yourself and you're an FBI agent, go over to France and say, hey, I'm FBI, I'm here to help you with an investigation. Not only will they kick you out of the country, they'll probably take your passport and ban you from coming back, because the FBI is a joke. And so is almost every other agency under there. And remember when I said they have to get their stuff done as quickly as possible because they know what's coming? Well, now Dimwit and the rest of the communists, they're pushing this new gun control. It's called Veteran Suicide Project. It's to protect veterans from suicide, right? Okay. And this Dimwit comes out and releases a new strategy aimed at reducing the public health and national security crisis of military and veteran suicide. The approach includes gun control messaging through safe storage of firearms. And then part of this is red flag laws. This would take firearms away from every vet who ever goes to his doctor, whether it's at the VA or elsewhere, and says, you know, I'm really upset. I need something to calm me down. And your doctor, being nothing more than a pill pusher, gives you some psychotropic. Instantly, you can no longer own a firearm. You don't believe me? Go look at the yellow sheet you fill out when you buy a gun, 4473, the form 4473. And you will find there's a couple little things. Are you addicted to a drug of any kind, or a habitual user of a drug that's controlled? And if you're taking a psychotropic, that is a controlled drug. Also, have you ever been adjudicated mentally inferior? Or there's different words they use. They change the forms all the time. But if you're under the care of a mental expert, psychiatrist, or therapy, it's the same thing. You can't own a gun. When I can, because of what's been going on this week, I haven't had time. The show notes are almost done from last week. These show notes need to get done and put up. But if you listen to what I say, if you listen to the words I'm talking about certain things, you don't need the show notes. You can just write these down and go look them up yourself. Like White House announces new veteran suicide project, gun control, and more. Look them up. Just do a search. You'll see it yourself. These communists have to push their stuff so hard and fast that we don't have time to turn around and go, holy crap, what are they doing? The saying, eternal vigilance is the cost of freedom, is real. You can't just sit back and watch it happen. It's getting to the boiling point real fast. A couple of little things real quick. The communists in charge of the House passed the infrastructure bill. This is the thing that is $555 billion or $5 trillion. Nobody really knows until they pass it and he signs it and it goes into effect. 13 Republicans, 13 traitors voted for it. Do you think you guys can remember 1 year from now and kick these bastards out? We can't afford to have any more traitors. You know, I have seen liberal Republicans, but I have never seen conservative Democrats. That whole concept is a lie. So Democrats never cross the aisle to vote against something like this. But the Republicans, some of them do. I'm not even going to have a link to it. You're going to have to figure it out yourself. 13 Republicans, traitors, signed on to the bill. And now, you know what that means? Now the big one comes. And they're going to blow that one right straight through. And by the time Christmas is here, this country will be destroyed. No questions asked. It's down the tube. The frogs are cooked. My son sent me something. He's on the internet all the time and he sees this stuff. January 21st, the Communist White House puts out this propaganda picture. And it said, the cost of a 4th of July cookout in 2021 is down 16 cents from last year. Okay? So what my son did was he found another picture. It shows the cost of a turkey, a 16-pound turkey in 2020 was $28.80. A 16-pound turkey in 2021, $55.20. Let's see, I saved $16 in 4th of July. And it's almost $25 more for a turkey on Thanksgiving. When I was a kid, we couldn't afford turkeys. So Dad and I would go out and we'd hunt. We'd come back with pheasants and ducks and doves. Whatever, if it moved, we shot it and ate it. We're going to have to get back to that, I presume. You know, every week I think of what I'm going to do for the show for this week. What do I want to do? And I think about it and think about it. And I check my old archives. And so I'm watching TV and here's CNN. And they do this report on winter's coming. You need to winterize your car. I thought that was kind of cute. Of course, the ideas they have are juvenile and feeble, but at least they were telling people to do things like check the air pressure on your tires and make sure you got good wiper blades and this and that. And then I changed the channel, and there's another station doing the exact same thing, telling people to prepare for the winter. So I thought to myself, what the hell? If it's good enough for them, it's good enough for us.
I really can't stay.
Baby, it's cold outside.
I got to go away.
Baby, it's cold outside.
This evening has been
hoping that you drop
so
in.
Very nice.
I hold your hands just like
my mother will start to
beautiful,
worry.
What's your
my
hurry?
Father will be pacing the floor.
Listen to the fireplace
so
roar.
So really I'd better scurry.
Beautiful, please don't
but
hurry.
Maybe just a half
I'll
a drink
put
more.
Put some records on while I pour.
The neighbors might
baby,
think.
It's bad out there.
Say what's in this
no
drink.
No cap to be had out there.
I wish I knew
your
how.
Your eyes are like starlight
to
now.
To break this spell.
I'll take your hat, your hair looks swell.
I ought to say no,
oh,
no,
mind
no, sir.
If I'm moving closer.
At least I'm gonna say that I tried.
What's the sense in hurting my pride?
I really can't
baby,
stay.
Don't hold out.
Baby, it's cold outside.
So what we're talking about now is how to prep your car for winter. Just hasn't hit with all its ferocity yet, but I can tell you this, it's going to. Because I'm seeing the squirrels out here look like little fat badgers running around. They got so much fat on them, they're eating so much and stocking so much food up. And usually, up in this area, the birds don't start their migration cycle until, oh, sometime in December. They're already gone. Serious, they're gone. Seagulls, believe it or not, we got seagulls up here. They're gone. So, going to help you figure out how to get your car into tip-top shape so you don't break down. Here's the thing. It's that you might think your car's in good shape, but by the time I'm done telling you about what we got to look at here, you're going to know it's in good shape. You do not want to break down in the middle of a snowstorm. Everybody says, oh, it's never going to happen to me. I read about it every winter. There's at least a dozen different times where people freeze to death, or they die of starvation, or something else happens because their car breaks down and they didn't think ahead. So that's my job, is to help you think ahead. So, and it doesn't matter what car you have, because we're going to start on the outside and we're going to work in. And you just take the data that I'm going to give you and you extrapolate it to fit your vehicle. I don't care if it's a scooter or diesel truck or Mack truck. It's all pretty much the same ideas. We're going to start. Now, this is going to be on the outside of your vehicle. So we're going to start with your tires. I know this is a stupid question, but are they bald? Okay. Yeah, well, see, that's something you don't want to have in inclement weather. So you look at your tires. Check the pressure. If the tires are good, check the pressure. Make sure they're set properly. You want to know what the tire pressure should be? Don't look on the tires. Open the door in your car, and there's a tag on either the door or on the door frame, and it'll tell you the size of tire that's factory for that vehicle and what the tire pressure should be. That's what you need to set it at. My son drove, he had his Subaru Outback, and he drove to Missouri and back. And before he left, he decided to check the air, and he looked at his new tires, and they said 60 PSI. So he set them at 60, drove all the way there, drove all the way back, and his tires, these were new tires, so he decided to have them rebalanced. So he took it into the tire shop, and the guy looks at it and goes, who the hell put the air in these tires? And Eric goes, I did. Why? Didn't you look at your door jam? He goes, why would I look at my door jam? It figured out it was supposed to be 32 pounds, and he used 60. Luckily, he didn't blow anything, so that was fine. So you check your tires, you check the tread, you check to see if there's any damage, any cuts on the sidewall. This happens a lot. Make sure there's nothing stuck inside one of the treads, like a nail or something, that can work its way out, and all of a sudden you're going to have a flat tire. And if you're driving, okay, now this is important, because what you don't do now is going to bite you in the butt in a short time. Such as this. When I was coming back from my trip to Texas, I'm in Montana, and I'm talking to the girl at the counter at a hotel, and she says, yes, and one of these days I got to get my car fixed. I go, what's wrong with it? She goes, well, it starts vibrating at about 40 miles an hour. And I said, well, that's balance. You need to get the balance on your tires checked. If your tire, if your front end starts vibrating at a certain speed, such as 30, 40, 50 miles an hour, that's due to the tires that you have are out of balance. Generally, I mean, it could be anything from a drive shaft out of balance to something on your front end out of balance. But generally, when it starts vibrating at a specific speed, it's because the tires are out of balance. Okay, that's not just an annoyance. That sets up a vibration. That vibration travels through the whole front end. And it can start to cause damage in tie rod ends, ball joints, and other parts. So if your tires are out of balance, get them balanced. Now we're going to go to your windows. Now we're on the outside, remember. But still on the outside, you're going to still check for function. Make sure your windows roll up and down. Make sure any glass that's broken or chipped is either repaired or it's safe enough for you. Now, I'll give you a trick here. Sometimes you get a chip and you know it's going to get worse. Well, there's a thing you can do to help protect that. You use, though in the old days, Grandpa used duct tape, but you can use, if you want clear tape, you can use shipping tape. Heavy duty shipping tape. This is the kind of stuff you can't break with your hands. And where the chip is, or even a small crack, you clean the whole area around there with alcohol. You wipe it down, you make sure it's bone dry and totally, totally clean. Then you take the shipping tape. Don't get your fingerprints on it, otherwise that's what you'll be looking at. And then you cut a piece to fit that crack and around, and if the crack's 2 inches long, you want the tape to be 3 inches long. And then you put the tape on there and you smooth it out from one end down. Now, that's going to help protect that piece of glass, whether it's a windshield or something on the side or a rear window or what have you, from going any further for a period of time. Okay, that's just a little trick. But make sure everything is copacetic. Everything's working fine. You don't have to worry about it. If you go take it to a car wash, good, clean your glass. Clean the windows. I don't mean at the gas station with a squeegee. I mean, tip up the wiper blades, spray it down with whatever glass cleanser you have, and then scrub the hell out of it so everything is perfectly spotless. Now, if you're like us and you park under a tree, you're going to have little tiny droplets of sap all over your windshield, and you're not going to be able to wash that off really easy. It's gotten so bad that I've literally taken a razor blade and turned it flat and shaved the windshield to get this stuff off. But generally, you could use a chemical cleaner and it'll get rid of most of them. And then what I have done is taken 4-0, that's 0000 steel wool, extra fine, ultra fine, whatever words you want to use. And I've lightly polished the glass. You can tell when your windshield's dirty and it's raining and the wiper blades are going back and forth. It sounds rough or it'll start chattering. So clean your glass as best as you can, and if you can, polish it with some ultra-fine steel wool. You're not pressing down on this steel wool. You're just lightly moving it across the glass. It will clean this thing up better than new. Wipers, talking about chattering. Your wipers, I don't care what company makes them, they're not going to last more than a year, year and a half. Depending on the area you're at and how inclement the weather is and how hot the sun gets and how you park your vehicle and how much, you know what I mean? It's rubber. It's going to rot. And this is a scam. A lot of these companies like Michelin and Rain-X, they say, oh, guaranteed for 2 years, guaranteed for 5 years. Just show us the receipt. How many people keep the receipts? Well, I do. I put them in the folder for the car. But still, if you don't have the receipt and they're gonna crack on you within a year, you're not going to, you know, you're screwed. You're going to have to buy something, a new set. You look at your wiper blades, keep them clean. The three parts that I look at on wiper blades is the mounting, where they clip on, not on your vehicle, but on the arm, the wiper arm. That gets loose, and your wiper blade actually will fall off. This isn't funny. This is real. It's happened to me a couple times, and I've seen it happen to many people, especially if they try and save a few bucks and buy some cheap wiper blades. Where it mounts onto the wiper arm, make sure that's snug. Also, some people just replace the blade itself. And to do that, you have to bend a little piece of sheet metal and slide the blade out and slide the new one in. Sometimes it doesn't work right. And all of a sudden, while you're using it, that blade starts to look like it's starting to get longer because it's sliding out. So check that. And a third part is to make sure that the rubber hasn't already cracked. You can do a visual. If it looks fine to you, well, that's fine. But now, so it looks fine. Well, what happens if the thing streaks? If the blade just doesn't have the right tension against the glass, it's going to streak right and left. Boom, boom, boom. That almost got me in a bad accident in North Carolina during a bad storm. I had brand new wiper blades on there. Unfortunately, the spring tension was so weak, the snow was building up on the window because it wasn't being wiped off. Also, another thing that happens is the rubber gets so hard that when you use it, even if you have special chemical solution on there, it's going to chatter back and forth. If you don't mind that, well, that's fine. Look at your wipers. Anything in any way, shape, or form indicates it should be, replace them. There's no secret. You can go to Walmart. You can go to any of the 8 billion other automotive stores in the United States. Now, look at your headlights. This is life-threatening. Your headlights have to be perfect. Older vehicles, it's a one-piece unit. It's glass, like a light bulb that goes in. If you have that, you make sure it's not cracked, it's not leaking. If you have what normal vehicles have for the past 15, 20 years, they have a plastic lens, and then the light bulbs are inside the lens, which are you can reach them inside your engine cavity. So you look at those and make sure you turn your headlights on, turn all your lights on, walk around, make sure everything's lit, have somebody step on the brakes, make sure the brake lights are working, test your turn signals, make sure they're working, check the high beams, make sure they're working. It's just as dangerous to have one of your low beams out. You've seen this many times. Somebody driving down the road, you think it's a motorcycle coming at you, and it's actually a car with one of their headlights dead. Now, the high beams will work. Just check everything. Make sure everything's working perfectly. Now, here's another little trick. These lenses have a cover over them. It's a microscopic sheet to protect them as you're driving. I mean, face it, you're doing 50, 60, 70, 80 miles an hour. Even a particle of dust hitting plastic is going to cause damage. What happens is over time, this protectant sheet gets dissolved. It gets torn off. The plastic starts to oxidize, and it'll become yellow. We were coming back years ago from Bonner, up way up north of here, and it was a snowstorm. And it wasn't a whiteout, but it was so bad. My headlights couldn't see a damn thing. And I'm not kidding. On the freeway. Now, when I say freeway, it was two-lane road, and there was no other traffic. But on the freeway, I could not see. I slowed down to 10 miles an hour, and I told my wife, I got to stop and wait for the snow to clear up a little bit. I don't dare move. So we stopped, and all of a sudden, we were driving a little minivan. All of a sudden, the minivan got pushed. Not hit, pushed. And I'm like, what the hell? And the next thing, the snow clears a little bit, and there's a moose leaning on my car. And there's about a dozen other ones crossing the road right there. The moose couldn't even see my car, and it walked right into it. So as soon as it cleared up a little bit, we drove. There was a gas station a mile up. We went in. The guy goes, oh, that's easy to fix. Your headlights are oxidized. And I go, what? I thought my headlights were bad, and I'm going to have to replace them. He got some plastic polish, Meguiar's plastic polish. Now, you can get any plastic polish. Motorcycle shops sell it to polish the wind visor and the helmets. So he got some plastic polish, and he walks out, and he wipes off the headlight, and it's yellow, and he squirts some of the stuff on there, and he does a polishing motion, just like you're putting wax on, scrubbing it real good, and he does it to the other side and lets it dry for about 5 minutes, and then he buffs it off, and they look brand new. And all of a sudden, my headlights are working. Don't get screwed by these companies that charge $50 a lens to clean your headlights. You can do it yourself for under $10. Now, another clue, when you're done cleaning it, take a coat of wax, any kind of wax. Rub it on. That's it. It will act as a protectant. You'll have to do that at least every other month until you replace the lenses yourself. Now, I'm going to tell you, attempting to nickel and dime yourself, and attempting to save a few dollars here and there, could end up costing you your life. I've driven, and I'm not exaggerating, over 2 million miles throughout the United States in my career. And many times I've broken down. And it's because I tried to save a few bucks here, a few bucks there. Or I couldn't even drive. One time driving up here, this is before we moved up into North Idaho. We lived in Sacramento and we drove up here. Driving a one-ton van. And what do I know? I'm an idiot from California. So I get up here, 4 inches of ice on the road. All my van did was sit there and go, vroom, vroom. It wouldn't go anywhere. I ended up having to pay almost $800 for a new set of tires to go on that van. Now, in California, where we were at the time, I could have got the same thing for around $400. So I tried to save some money by not buying tires, and I ended up getting screwed. And the same thing can happen. I told you about the snowing so bad my wiper blades were not working. I ended up having to stay overnight in a hotel. Cost me another $40. So don't think you're going to be saving any money. You're going to lose money, and you have a possibility of harming yourself or somebody around you. So now we're going to look at the motor and the powertrain. Now, obviously, if your car doesn't run, your car doesn't run. So that's up to you to figure it out. But I'm talking about the necessities for an engine. You want to check the oil filter or check or change. Here's the thing. You're going to check or change. Check your oil. Make sure it's not all sludgy up. If it is, change your oil. Hell, you can get oil changes now so cheap it's ridiculous. We got a place here in town for $19.95. They'll change your oil and filter. It's cheap filter and cheap oil, but it'll keep your engine running. And you check your air filter as well. Make sure the air filter's not clogged up. People don't look at the air filter. They think of everything else but that. And some of these newer vehicles, you can't just unscrew a nut and pull the top off and look at it. You got to unscrew like 4 to 6 screws and take the cap off. And then you can see your air filter. But you need to check your air filter. Your air filter determines the power and the potency of your engine. If it's clogged with crap from the summer or dust or dead birds and bugs, it's going to cut down the oxygen flow to your engine. Your engine is not going to function properly. Now, inside most vehicles, you're going to have what's called a cabin filter. Usually, it's behind the glove box. If you look in your manual, you'll figure it out. Or just go to YouTube and type in cabin filter and then the year and make of your vehicle. And you'll see some guy changing hits. Change the cabin filters. That's important. Especially like up here. It's cold. You're driving, all the windows up, the heater on, and a diesel pulls in front of you and billows black smoke. Well, if your cabin filter's clogged or dirty, you're getting it all in the cabin. Check your tranny fluid as well. You're checking all your fluids here. Check your transmission fluid. Top it off. This is the kind of stuff you don't want to do when it's 10 degrees outside. Been there, done that. Check your brake fluid. If it needs to be topped off, do it. If it's dirty and filthy, you should have it pressure flushed to put clean brake fluid in there. You check your radiator level as well. Now, you do this when it's cold. If your radiator fluid is a year old, maybe 2 years old, you don't have to worry about it nowadays. But if it's older or if it's questionable, you use a hydrometer. This is like a giant eyedropper that you stick in the radiator fluid and you suck it up and there's balls inside and they float according to the ability of the antifreeze to keep itself from freezing. See, you've heard me many times say, buy your liquids before the winter hits so they don't freeze and break in shipping. Same thing's going to happen to your vehicle. If your antifreeze does not stay in a liquid state when it's freezing out, it will expand and it will break your engine. Seriously, I have seen it. It'll fracture the motor. The water will expand and push the cast iron block out and crack. There's a toast. That's garbage. I mean, literally, you're not going to fix that. So check your antifreeze. Make sure it's fine. If you want to do all of this stuff, you could take it to a shop and say, this is what I want you to do. Check all of this stuff. Winterproof me. I got no idea how much it'll cost where you are. So that's up to you to figure out. And the other thing is, make sure nothing's leaking. This sounds stupid. And I have so many people say, oh yeah, it's 20 years old. Of course it's going to leak. That's BS. Leaks come from some place that is not tightened down or has a hole in it. And that hole could be caused by a rock throwing up rust. Like in most engine blocks, you have what's called a freeze plug. These are usually about 2-inch, 3-inch diameter, and they're inserted in holes along your block, your engine block. The idea is if your engine, the water in your engine and radiator starts freezing up, those blocks will burst out first. Sometimes those rust out, and it's a task to replace them, but it can be done. So you need to pay attention to if something's leaking. Again, this is all preventative stuff. This is so you don't end up having to do this at 20 degrees, or your wife says, okay, honey, the baby's coming, get me to the hospital, and your car won't start. So this is stuff you need to check ahead of time. Check your battery. Make sure your battery is functional. Again, that's part of the starting sequence is the battery. Look, you can figure it out. Take it to any Pep Boys, Napa. They'll check your battery generally free. And if it's not working fine, replace the battery. When I was a kid, I would buy the cheapest rebuilt battery I could if my battery went out. And I'd have a truck with an 8-cylinder motor in it, and I'd have a battery that barely powers a 4-cylinder. I didn't know difference. I found out the hard way. I put the strongest thing I can put in any of my vehicles and make sure it fits. Costco's got good prices on batteries. If you go to Costco, I presume Sam's Club is the same thing. So make sure your battery is functional. Make sure the cables are tightened on there. If you have to, loosen them. Clean the terminals, the post that on the battery that sticks up. Clean the inside of the terminal that goes on, put it back on, tighten it down. And then what you can do, you can either go and buy this little spray. It'll spray out thick red, and it's for battery terminal protection. It's anti-corrosion. And you spray that thing down, and that thing will last a couple years. Or do like we used to do and just use some Vaseline. Or grease. Doesn't matter. After you've cleaned your terminals, you spread grease around it on top of it so it doesn't corrode. Now, the reason batteries corrode is because the hydrogen sulfate leaks out. And a lot of times it'll leak out right around your post. So if you keep getting corrosion, your battery's bad. You're going to have to replace it. If it's the old style battery that you can change the water in, or you can add water to it, look at it, add water. Only add distilled water. Go spend $1.99 or whatever and get a gallon of distilled water and save it for just the battery. And the reason is any water with any minerals in it whatsoever can short out the plates inside the battery. So only fill the battery with distilled water. Check your wiper fluid while you're at it. Do not just add water to fill it up. This is a funny thing, not when it happens to you, but when you look at it and watch it in somebody else, you're like, oh, that's funny. I'm at South Lake Tahoe. It's 8 degrees, and this guy goes down to start his car. I was managing a resort there, and this tenant goes down to start his car. Starts his car, turns on the warmer, turns on the wiper blades. Now, it's snowing, so his wipers are wiping the snow off, okay? But it's still some sticking to the window, so he squirts it, uses wiper fluid, and the wiper fluid freezes on his window. It freezes on his window. That's because he added water to it. Buy yourself, go into Walmart, spend the $2.49 and get the gallon of negative 20 degrees wiper fluid. Or even get the negative 40 degrees pink fluid. It doesn't matter. Spend the extra dollars. You'll use a gallon a year, but make sure your wiper fluid will handle low temperatures. Make sure it's kept filled, especially in the winter. And while you're in the process of checking lubricants and checking oil levels and the like, if you want to, and I like to do this at least once a year, check the rear end. Find out what kind of fluid goes in there. It's usually thick, and it could usually about 90 weight lube oil goes in there. Check it, make sure it's filled. Check your transaxle. If you're four-wheel drive, check that system. Check everything. If you need a lube job, we'll take the whole thing in. You know, this all everything I'm telling you can be done by you, or you can go pay somebody to do it. Check all fluid levels. Make sure they're all topped off. You just tell them. Balance and rotate my tires. Check all fluid levels. Make sure they're all topped off. You know, they'll do it. It just costs money. So now we're going to get inside the vehicle. We're going to check your doors. Make sure the latches work. Now, if you have hatches, make sure the hatch latch is working. Make sure the hinges are working. They aren't flopping around and loose. It doesn't take much to take a screwdriver and tighten up hinges, tighten up latches. Do that. This is all preventative. The more you allow a vehicle to fall apart, the faster it, and worse it's going to get. So you check all the door and hatch latches and hinges. Check the seals. You know, sometimes you close your driver's door and you're driving along the road and you can hear wind coming through. That seal's bad. You need to replace it. You can find seals for anything. You don't have to go to the dealer. You can find it on eBay, jcwhitney.com. So you fix the seals. Make sure everything rolls up and down like it should. Every part in your vehicle that is worn, like you have these what's called window wipes on both sides, inside and outside of your windows. You roll it up and down. You see these little rubber things that fold over. And that when it's rolled down and then when you roll it up, they kind of wipe it. Yeah, make sure those are clean, by the way. Roll your window all the way down and take a rag and stick in that channel and wipe them down good, because I have seen windows gouged and scraped because people have driven through the sand and gotten in that area. So make sure that stuff works fine. And any of that stuff that looks worn or torn, you can always buy it and replace it. It's available. Yeah, you open and close all your doors. If a door is hard to close, you know, you get a can, you go to Walmart, you get a can of spray lubricant, not WD-40, but some kind of silicone spray lubricant. Open your doors. I've had old vehicles and that, you know, you hear the ear. Oil it. That way it won't freeze up on you in the middle of winter. So oil your hinges, oil your latches. The latches, usually you don't oil them, you grease them. And don't put too much on, but just put enough on so that your doors can open and close easily. Now I'll give you a secret. I always carry a straw. Well, I don't carry it. I have it right inside the door of the garage. When it gets, sometimes some weird stuff happens up here. It'll rain, cover the car in water, right? And then it freezes. So I go out in the morning and I have a frozen latch. Can't stick my key in it. Well, you take a straw. And if you're in California, you're screwed because all you can get is paper straws. But you take a plastic straw and you blow onto the latch. And that will melt the ice, and then you can kind of stick it inside the latch and blow some more, and that will melt all the ice in there. Now, I haven't had to worry about that in over 10 years because all my cars now got little push-button things. But still, that's a trick. It's just, you know, a little straw. Check all the controls, and I already covered this on the outside because you were checking the lights. Now I want you to check not just the lights and the blinkers, but your heater fans, your heater controls, defroster. You test them. Make sure they work. Don't just turn it on. Make sure it gets hot. I made the mistake of taking a date from Sacramento to Lake Tahoe, and my heater wasn't working, and I didn't know that until we were halfway there and had to turn it on because we hit a snowstorm. Yeah, that didn't work out well. So check all your controls inside. While you're at it, you know, check the dome lights, check the radio, check all the lights, check everything. You're heading off all the problems that could happen. Make sure your gas, brake, clutch pedals aren't sticky or jammed. During the winter months, a lot of time people will throw carpets in there to absorb the moisture and stuff. And there are many stories of people who has jammed a carpet or a mat has jammed the gas pedal and they can't stop it, and they just drive right through the 7-Eleven store or something like that. Make sure any mats you have down there are clear from your gas pedal, your brake pedal. Make sure there's nothing behind the brake pedal to impede its motion. This is common sense. Now, if your brake pedals or clutch pedal has this old worn rubber pad on it that your foot slips all the time on, why? You can find them for a couple bucks a piece on eBay. or you can find them at any Napa store or almost any auto parts store. Make sure all your controls are functioning. If you have an emergency brake, make sure it's adjusted, make sure it's functioning too. So this is all common sense. So basically what I'm talking to you to do is use your common sense and make sure that all of your functioning parts and safety parts on your vehicle are working like they should. Now we're going to talk about what should you carry in your vehicle, because we've already done all the safety checking and that. So now, what do you carry in your vehicle? Now, some of this stuff could be all the time. Some of this stuff is just good for when it's cold out. Like toolkit. How extensive a toolkit do you want to carry is up to you. You could carry simply a Leatherman multi-tool or a Craftsman complete tool set. That is totally up to you and basically up to the condition of your vehicle. Or if you don't want to carry any tools at all, you got AAA. I mean, who knows? Don't ever trust that. We've been stuck for 8 hours before waiting for AAA tow truck to get to our vehicle. Carry flashlights, and I say lights, not light. Carry more than one flashlight in there. Small, medium, large. Flashlights literally are a dime a dozen now. You can go to Harbor Freight and you get one free each time you buy something if you want. But carry flashlights and a spare couple of batteries for these flashlights. Carry road flares. These can be seen a lot better than a flashlight can. And they can be used for numerous things. They can actually be used to start a fire in an emergency situation. A mandatory thing is a first aid kit. How articulate you want to make it is up to you. Basic first aid kit, some antibiotics, some alcohol wipes, some Band-Aids, some pads, aspirin, you know, some non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, aspirin, ibuprofen, what have you. First aid kit. Here's another thing that is kind of mandatory. Toilet paper. Well, you know what it's for, but let's say you're driving along, you need to blow your nose. Well, that's the easiest thing, right? You get stuck in a snowstorm like I did one time for 8 hours. You're going to need it for what it's made for. Now, also, this is a good thing. A ski mask, or I don't know what they call them. It's a ski hood, ski mask. The Democrats wear them. They call them Antifa. I'll tell you something. I was coming out of Montana some years back, and I was driving a little Isuzu pickup, four-wheel drive, and it started to snow. Yeah, no big deal. And then it started to blow really bad, 40-mile-an-hour winds. And then it started to snow more. And then it's a foot of snow on the road. There's nobody else on the road. Nobody else is stupid enough to be out there, but I am. Well, I got to put chains on now. And it's a four-wheel drive vehicle. I'm going to put the chains on the front. So I get out. I can only be out of the vehicle for 15 seconds at a time before my ears start to freeze off. I didn't have a snow mask. I didn't have a hood. I had a hat and I had a good coat and I had gloves, but I didn't have that mask. I put chains on 15 seconds at a time. It took me an hour or so to get two chains on that vehicle. And the next place I stopped at, I bought one of those little hoods. Make sure you have insulated gloves, not just gloves to do work on. We're talking winter here. Okay, just some insulated gloves, Walmart. The smart thing to do is to have a cell phone and a recharging cable, 12-volt cable, so you can recharge your cell phone. I mean, it sounds stupid, but not everybody carries a cell phone. But you should have one when you're traveling. Have blankets. You can have these survival blankets, right? These are the aluminized blankets that fold up into like a deck of cards. That's all well and good. I like to travel with a thick sleeping bag, just in case. But have a blanket, have something in there. Food, have some food in there of some kind. You can have some candy bars or something. Be careful, because most people put food in a vehicle and then they forget it's in there. And if you put some candy bars in, like your glove box, and then you forget they're in there, and then summer comes and these things get melted, yeah, it's kind of messy. We have these in our store, Survival Enterprises. You go to se1.us, on the left-hand side, you can click on food, and you'll find these survival food tabs. They come in a container the size of a canteen, a GI canteen, and they hold 180 of these tablets. They're about the size of a marble that's been squished a little bit. They're chewable. They're food. This is emergency food. It'll store 25 years plus, and you eat like, maybe a dozen of them and a glass of water. You're full. That's a meal. So you could keep some of that in each vehicle. Have a water filtering bottle of some kind. so that you can get water. You can drink water. If you're stuck somewhere, you could drink the water without having to worry about it. Like, we have the Sawyer Mini filters here that we sell $20 a piece. A can of de-icer is a smart thing to have. These $1, $2, and they have a built-in ice scraper on them. You spray them on. It's ethanol-based, but you spray it on your windshield. It dissolves ice. I don't care how thick it is. Another thing to have is a roll of Gorilla duct tape. Not just the cheap duct tape, the stuff that'll stick underwater type stuff. I've blown a radiator hose in a pickup I had years ago. And this is up in the mountains. There's no AAA to call. And I didn't have a spare radiator hose, but I had this special duct tape. This stuff will stick to anything. So I let the engine cool, open the radiator cap, make sure the hose was dried, and I wrap about a half inch thick of this Gorilla tape on that thing. And then I filled it up with water, put it together, drove home, and it stayed on there for about 6 months before I just coughed up the $2.95 to buy another radiator hose. Spare fuses. That's a given. Spare fuses for all of your, whatever fuses you use in that vehicle, make sure you got a little container. You can use an old Band-Aid container, you know, the tin ones, or the mint containers, and just put all the spare fuses in there. And make sure you got a compass. Now that sounds, oh, who needs a compass anymore? Let me tell you something. I got lost one time so bad I ended up in a farmer's front yard. And I'm not kidding. It's because there's two seasons in Idaho. There's winter and there's construction. And I decided to travel south during construction. And I'm going through some little town underneath the left elbow of the side of Idaho. I'm just following the signs that said detour, detour, detour. Everything was torn up. And it was just starting to get dark. And I'm not kidding, within 20 minutes, I'm knocking on this guy's door saying, I'm sorry, I'm lost. Can you help me? And he looks and he goes, you're not the first person tonight to show up here. Instant tire inflators. The cans. There's a company called Slime. Now, this is bad stuff. This is nasty crap. And when you get your tire, when you have the tire shop remove your tire to fix it, they're going to complain to you because of all the weird slime that's inside of it. But I'll tell you what, if you get a hole in your tire in the middle of nowhere, you just put this on it. It fills it up and it seals the leak. Jumper cables. If not for you, for someone else. Then a good thing to have is about a 3-foot by 3-foot piece of carpet. Or, like most of my vehicles have, weather beater mats in there, and we have a cargo mat in the back. Well, and the reason I say this is you're going to want to kneel on something instead of mud or snow. So either have a carpet piece rolled up or a mat that you can lay down. Make sure you have a fire starting kit. The simple, typical fire starting kit. Like the Air Force magnesium block with a little ferrous iron thing that you can flint, a little flint thing that throws a spark. And take a half a dozen cotton balls, soak them in Vaseline, and put them in a baggie, and put all that stuff together. You never know. Make sure you have a lighter or two as well. Knives, make sure you got a folding knife or a fixed blade knife. You need something sharp in case you have to cut something. Make sure you've got a battery-operated radio. I did get stuck in the snow for 8 hours one time, and if I hadn't had the radio, I would have gone nuts. Instead, I got to listen to old-time Mystery Theater. Have yourself a shovel or one of the USGI entrenching tools, like the 40-inch D-handled round nose tool shovel. Those things, you get stuck in the snow, you'd be surprised. Those things can really help you out. 100 feet of quarter-inch nylon rope. That's self-explanatory. That could be used for all kinds of different things. And then tire chains. Even if you have the most bodacious studded tires, there are so many places now in America that they're just flat. They'll lock you down and they won't let you travel unless you have tire chains on. And that's Idaho's that way. When the 4th of July pass gets snowed down, doesn't matter what you got on your car. You have to have tire chains on or they're not going to let you through. Now, that's just what I would call the standard equipment. And it sounds like a lot, but it's not. You can fit it mostly under your rear seat or, you know, if you got a Subaru Forester or Outback or, you know, things like that, a RAV4. There are so many hidey holes in your vehicles, it'll blow your mind. In a RAV4, you lift up because the spare tires is inside, but it's under the cargo area. You lift up a flat thing, and you can see underneath, you see the tire there. There's all these little cubby holes in there, so you can store a lot of stuff on there, in there, at there, under there. You figure it out. Now, the additional equipment. This is not stuff that you should have, but you can have. A CB radio. CB radios don't go long range, but I'll tell you, all truckers have them. When I got stuck in the snow, all I did was get on channel 17, and I said, breaker, breaker, what's going on? And a trucker comes back, he goes, there's 300 slide-offs, so we ain't going nowhere soon. And you can either have a mounted CB, or you can buy those handheld units. A single-bit axe is a good thing to have. Not a toy. Not a little hatchet. I mean, an axe. Unless you want to carry a chainsaw, but a single-bit axe, you can use that and get yourself out of if a tree falls down or something like that. If you're really worried about it, get yourself a high lift jack. And these are special jacks to really raise vehicles up to get out from being stuck in boulders and such. There's something called a come along, and this is like a little hoist that you crank, and you can hook it one end to a tree, the other end to your bumper, and then you could jack it, and it'll pull you through, and it's got a cable on it. Okay, bolt cutters, in case you got to cut something like a lock on a gate. Water. If you're not too worried about it, you don't need to take water with you. But if you're doing a long trip, you're going to want to take at least a quart of water with you, maybe even a gallon of water. And you might as well make it distilled just in case you have to put it in a radiator. Now, don't only take that before the trip. Don't leave it in your vehicle as an emergency thing forever, because what happens? If it gets cold, it'll freeze. So just take water with you when you need it. Take a bottle or a jar of hand cream. Now, I'll tell you something about hand cream. Yes, it moisturizes. I had a seafood business for 5 years. One of the tricks of the trade, because we dealt with dry ice. Dry ice is over 200 degrees below zero. You physically cannot hold this in your hands. You put it in your hands, and pain is almost instant. Unless you coat yourself with some hand cream. You put hand cream on your hands, and then you can hold the dry ice, and you'll freak out everyone around you and say, oh my God, this guy's Superman. Well, it works the same way in the cold. You coat yourself, your head, your face, your arms, whatever's lightly exposed, you coat. And it will protect you to a degree from the cold. Get yourself a number 10 can and mix ice melt and kitty litter in it. Obviously, the kitty litter will give you traction, but ice melt will melt through the ice. I've been stuck before on 4 inches of ice. I couldn't move. And I had my can with the mixture of the kitty litter and ice melt, and I sprinkle it on the front of the ice and on in front of my tire for about 2 feet and behind my tire for about 2 feet. And then I let it work a little bit and then got the shovel out and cleared that area, and I was able to rock out and take off. It's a good idea to have some starting fluid. Just in case. It's a spray can. I don't care how bad your engine is. You spray that down the carburetor, it's going to start. Spray lube is a good thing to have also. I've had door hinges freeze up on me. This is all before I knew what the hell I was doing. I had door hinges freeze up on me. It's because I wiped them all dry. There was no lube on there at all, and it got water on there, and it froze. So I had a little tiny can. It might have been 2 ounces. Of what's called Remington oil, and I coated down the hinges with that, and never had the problem again. Talcum powder, baby powder, little container of baby powder. Now, sometimes your belts in your engine, your fan belt and what have you, they get cold, and they will start squealing like crazy. Well, just put the talcum powder on it. Now, there's a trick to doing it; otherwise, you'll look like an idiot. You have to do it without the engine running. You just spray some of the talcum powder, now obviously on the underside of the belt, and then turn the engine over a little bit and turn it off, spray some more, turn it on, turn it off. Or if you want to, while it's running, just lean over and go, and there'll be a giant cloud of talcum powder everywhere. But either way, what's going to happen is going to stop your belt from squealing. It doesn't fix it, but it stops it from squealing. Have yourself a tarp. Get a tarp of some kind. It's waterproof. You can get one the size of your vehicle if you want. And that way, if something happens to you, you can cover the vehicle with it and give it some protection. Have yourself a mixture of quart and gallon baggies. Now, quart and gallon baggies are waterproof. Sandwich baggies are not. Oxygen can get into them, so can water. So quart and gallon baggies, if you got a problem, you can put your stuff in there and not worry about it getting wet. Anyway, I'm sure there's more to this, and everybody's going to be able to say, oh, well, this is a great idea, but you forgot blankety blank. Well, that's up to you to figure out. There are certain things that I'm not going to do here because I don't live in Florida. And there's certain things that people live in Florida aren't going to do because they don't live out here. Everybody's different, and you'll figure it out for yourself.
So basically, what I'm saying there is take a look at the vehicle that you're going to be using during the winter. Make sure you're not doing any shortcuts. Make sure you're doing everything you can to make sure that you don't get stuck in the snow. We have people every year that die up here simply because they forget to do something. Or worse, they were never taught. Survival Enterprises, SE1.us, 800-753-1981. If you want to buy something, you better hurry your butt up because we're already out of half a dozen different products that we can't get right now. Our colloidal minerals. We have about 24 orders sitting in the back waiting for the minerals to come in. And they had a little problem. They couldn't get the lid for the bottles, but they got the lid. The bottles are being packaged up and they're theoretically shipping out Friday or Saturday. I'm not sure which. A couple days ago. But this is an idea what's happening right now. So this is the Armchair Survivalist. Pay attention to what's going on out there. Keep your nose in the air and your ear to the ground. And I'll theoretically see you next week.